We are joined by Senator Dr. Ralph Alvarado. He has served as a member of the Kentucky State Senate since 2015, representing the 28th District, including Clark, Fayette, Montgomery. And Senator Alvarado has also, of course, he is a medical doctor, and he completed his residency at the University of Kentucky. All I can say is, I guess, go Cats. Welcome to the program, Senator. How are you?
I'm doing great. Go Cats, absolutely. Unfortunately, we have no Cats to watch right now. It's been kind of a withdrawal from all sports. And, you know, it's my kids are home, as many kids are home right now from college, and that's something you've been commenting on is, it's been odd for us. We've been growing up as a baseball family. No baseball to watch. Obviously, the biggest thing everybody's watching for now is the NFL draft in about a week and a half. And I told my son that'll be the most watched NFL draft probably ever in history because nothing else to watch on TV that's going to be active. So, but yes, go Cats, absolutely.
Absolutely. Even still, we're going to still root. all right. So it's been about 10 days. We'll go ahead and just jump in here. It's been about 10 days since your legislative update there on Facebook that you posted. And of course, the main topic that you posted in about was this year's budget. How does this year's budget look different for the listeners?
Well, it's unprecedented. Normally, when in the General Assembly, it used to meet every 2 years. For those of you who remember prior to the 1990s and prior, every 2 years, we went to an every year session, a long and a short one, to kind of help during a long session that bills that we couldn't get across the finish line to use that as the means of getting some of those tougher bills across the finish line. Well, the hard part is we still pass an every 2 year budget. This year, we did only a 1 year budget. It's unprecedented. And it's a pretty stark budget. We didn't have any increases, and we didn't cut education, but no increases in education. We basically gave the governor a lot more flexibility, just not knowing what's ahead for the future. The projections that we have are pretty pessimistic right now economically, and we had a pretty good clip. Things were going really strong. This whole COVID-19 thing has obviously put a major damper on the economic projections for the state. There's fewer pretty high unemployment rates after this, and so we don't really know what's going to happen as far as projections of income and revenue. We postponed our tax filing deadline till July the 15th. April 15th used to be the biggest economic day for the Commonwealth, where everybody paid their taxes in. We've pushed that into the next fiscal year, so we're going to have a major hole for this year to provide people economic relief. So it's a one-year budget. We have to come back next year and do it again, and the following year after that and do it again, and that's unprecedented. And it's just, I think there's a lot of fear and a lot of unknown as to what's going to happen for the future. So no major increases of any type. If anything, we're trying to conserve as much money into our state savings account as possible to give the governor a lot of flexibility in the next several months.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's unpack just a little bit of that. Of course, you did mention education funding, and that has been a hot button issue now for about, 2 to 3 years, as the previous administration, of course, attempted a very highly controversial solve for the state pension crisis. Now, as this administration kind of launched in, there were some promises for raises for teachers, but I'm assuming in the current budget, we're probably not going to see those. Is that correct?
Yeah, we had a lot of our school boards, even if things were looking rosy, a lot of our school boards were still concerned that if we offered raises, the school boards would have to pay. You know, there's an automatic raise that teachers have every year that's built into their salary structure. So many of us have to depend on our employers to give us a raise based on performance, et cetera. Teachers have an automatic raise. So once you give a raise at the beginning, all their consequent raises are based on a percentage of that, and that means their contributions on their retirement is higher for their employer, which is a school board, every year beyond it. A lot of school boards throughout the state said, are you going to do that? Because we can't afford the back-end raises over the next years in the future. That's going to be massive expenditures, and we can't do it. So even if the economy was great, there was still going to be a major way of how do we fund the pensions for that? How do the local school boards fund the pensions for that on the back end? They weren't going to have the funds for it. And so there was an idea from the Senate to push a lot of the money into the SEEK formula, which is what we use to fund education. That's a per-pupil amount. The Senate wanted to increase it to another record level by another $161 per student. That would give the school boards the money, and then they could use that for raises if they wanted to on a local level, or they could use it towards education or whatever they thought was best at the local level. But obviously, with this whole situation, that's all been quashed. We're not going to see raises for any state employees. We were hoping to provide state employees who haven't seen a raise in 8 years, 9 years, to provide them a raise. And that's all been quashed right now. So there's not going to be any raises, no increases for pupil spending in education. And those are some of our biggest budget items that we have, obviously, in the state budget. But that's all been postponed until the future, at least if we can hopefully have a quick rebound in the economy.
Right. Now, along those same lines with the massive job loss that we're seeing across the nation and in Kentucky, I know in your update there you highlighted some information about unemployment. Could you kind of describe a little bit of that for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, unemployment insurance is something that is very regulated, obviously, in the states. When people apply, you have to have certain qualifications to be able to do that. And the governor, I think, issued some executive orders that as a legislature, we don't think he had the authority to do, but we agreed with the concept of what he needed to get done. So, you know, the governor in the state of emergency, whenever we hear that from a governor, it's usually to draw down more federal funds to help with a crisis of some sort. But it's going to be more of an, there's usually a closing date as to when it ends. So there was a bill that I had filed called Senate Bill 150. It was the COVID-19 relief bill where it gives the governor some of that authority to be able to kind of waive a lot of the fees, requirements for business licenses, waive provisions relating to unemployment insurance. People could apply for it quicker and get approved quicker. It would permit the cabinet to look for assistance from the federal government for to be able to reimburse the unemployment insurance trust fund, which is going to get markedly depleted. In the past, it was really underwater. Over the last several years, we've really built that back up, back in the black. It's likely going to go back in the red again, so we're hoping some of the federal relief can go towards that. And also, it gave the governor the authority to be able to postpone taxes to align that with the federal government, like I mentioned earlier about July the 15th being the new filing deadline for this year. And there was a lot of other stuff in there about clarifying some of his medical executive orders that have been confusing for providers who wonder if they can be open, not open, what they can and can't do. We put in language to make that clear. Provided, you know, medical providers and first-line responders some immunity if they tried to good faith efforts to treat COVID-19 in unconventional ways. And then also a lot of local government provisions in that bill to let local government meet, because they're required by statute to meet in person, to have open records requests met in a certain period of time. Obviously with this, it's going to, again, affect all of that. And so local government was seeking for some relief to say, hey, can we have some delays in open records requests? Can we meet through video teleconferencing and not have to be in person? And so we made a lot of changes with that. And then also a lot of our boards, for nursing boards, medical boards, pharmacy boards, to be able to recruit older, retired, providers that have been out there to be able to come back into the workforce if we need them, to allow out-of-state doctors who might want to not get a license but register to help us read x-rays and do telemedicine and that sort of thing. So we put in a lot of those restrictions. And then also it had an emergency clause in the bill and also told the governor that when this thing ends, you have to tell us when it ends, because most of the times states of emergency just kind of fade away. In this situation, these are all kind of unprecedented changes to unemployment insurance. We can't leave this open-ended. So once he ends this, then all of these restrictions and all these waiving of rights and restrictions, all these things go away, and it goes back to life as usual when it comes to unemployment insurance and licensing, et cetera. So it was a very comprehensive bill. There's been talk about a second one. I've got some other ideas to help our employers, but it's been met with a bit more resistance, I think, from some of the leadership members. So I'm not sure that we're going to get a second bill out to do that. But a lot of this really provided quick relief so that people, if they've lost their jobs, been laid off, they can get some assistance financially to get them back on their feet.
Right. Yeah. So, all right, let's change hats for just a second. Of course, you are a medical doctor, so let's take the senator hat off for a second. And, of course, the modeling is changing daily. We're seeing adjustments and changes as some of it's in effect. Some of the models take into account the staying at home initiatives. How bad is it in your medical opinion, and when are we kind of seeing a horizon on this, or do we see a horizon on this? I know there's varying levels.
Yeah, it's so hard to predict it. I'll tell you, coronavirus, when I hear the term, people think of it like it's something new. It's a new virus, and it's a different mutation from what we've had before. But every virus, there's certain classes of viruses, and then they often will mutate into new versions. That's what happens with the flu every year when we have flu vaccines. We have a vaccine to last year's flu, but it will mutate a little bit And so every year the vaccine may or may not be as effective as we'd hope. Coronaviruses are going to be similar. And so this strain in particular is deadly. I mean, it can kill people. And you've heard all the stories that a perfectly healthy person can get this, and it may just be like a cold or not even know that they've got it, and it goes away. And then other people get this, and within a matter of 3 or 4 days, they can't breathe and they're on ventilators fighting for their lives. And so it's a real infection. It is real. Some people think, well, it hasn't hit me, so it's not that big of a deal. And I think, no, it is real. We have to be careful. The kind of precautions we're taking with hand washing, covering your sneeze and your coughs, all those things are common sense things that we do even when the flu comes around every year with any kind of a cold. Normally, coronaviruses don't do well in warm temperatures. They're not typically summer cold. So what I'm hoping for is warmer temperatures quicker. Most of the time, I like to enjoy a nice spring, and it's been a pretty nice spring here already in Kentucky. But you're hoping for warmer weather to hit, because it typically will keep this virus from spreading. The key thing is, even after this thing settles down, I'm hoping to see some ease of restrictions, where we can start letting people get, obviously, back to work. And you got to keep in mind, though, that we still should be very careful about hand washing, cleaning down counters, keeping the same sanitation that we're doing right now, even in the future, because there's always the risk that if this thing doesn't fully go away over the summer, that it can rebound in the fall and come back and hit people again. And so I think those things are real. I think, personally, I mean, right now, the latest projections I've seen is that the peak is for Kentucky is going to be in the next few days. And if it is, then, I would think that it starts to decline, that, again, if it warms up, hopefully we'll start seeing some easing of restrictions. I know Texas is considering that already. Florida is already starting to look at that, particularly for medical providers, to get offices up and running, because right now a lot of your medical staff is laid off. And with that comes a lesser workforce. If it does have a big outbreak, you want to have them up and ready to run. So I think it's a real bug. It does kill people. I think it's important for us to do a lot of the things that are being requested. And I think most Kentuckians are following suit with what should be done, just to make sure that we're all as safe as possible. But, there's always that risk of that rebound in the near future. So it's one of these things that'll be a summer a spring never to forget for most of the country. But it's one of those things that I think this risk is going to continue to increase. The more population we have in the world, we're up over 7 billion people. These are the kind of things of a reality in the future that can happen with global pandemics, that this may be the first time we've seen this in our lifetime, but it may not be the last.
All right. Well, yeah. To kind of transition to end on a high note, I know your time is very valuable, and we appreciate your time this morning. Of course, our Easter celebration looked a little different this past weekend. How did you end up celebrating with your family there?
So, we got up. Our Grace Baptist obviously has our sunrise service, so we got up with our kids, and we watched our sunrise. We get to watch it on TV, which is different. So we plug into to Facebook, we get it up on our TV screen, and kind of watched, our pastor. We saw him, it looked like an outdoor scene, but I think it was pre-recorded for the sunrise service, or maybe it wasn't. It may have been outside at the time, but nonetheless, we got to watch that. And it was just time with all of us sitting around, and family, and our kids are back home, and it's fun to have a lot of conversations. They're young adults now, so often our focus of conversation are school and what's important for them, friends, people that they've connected with this past week they haven't heard from in a while, since high school perhaps, and catching up on a lot of those things. And then we enjoyed a good dinner. It's always, I think we had chicken, mac and cheese, we had a pretty good salad. My wife had banana pudding, which is a pretty classic Kentucky dish, and I'm disappointed because I'm going to pack on a few pounds as that thing gets fully eaten away the next couple of days. But we enjoy just time together, and reading, our tradition is to read the story also in Luke and John. So a lot of fun for that, and a lot of focus and reflection on the gifts that God has provided us in our lives, and ultimately the most important thing is the gift of salvation that we all have, and just grateful for that, and remembering what that means for all of us as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for your time with us this morning. If folks are just tuning in, we've been joined by Senator Dr. Ralph Alvarado. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Ethan. Appreciate it.